Psycho by Robert Bloch. Read by William Hootkins. Norman Bates heard the noise, and a shock went through him. It sounded as though somebody was tapping on the window pane. He looked up hastily, half prepared to rise, and the book slid from his hands to his ample lap. Then he realized that the sound was merely rain, late afternoon rain, striking the parlor window. Norman hadn't noticed the coming of the rain, nor the twilight. But it was quite dim here in the parlor now, and he reached over to switch on the lamp before resuming his reading. The light shone down on his plump face, reflected from his brimless glasses, bathed the pinkness of his scalp beneath the thinning, sandy hair as he bent his head to resume reading. It was really a fascinating book. No wonder he hadn't noticed how fast the time had passed. It was The Realm of the Incas by Victor W. Von Hagen, and Norman had never before encountered such a wealth of curious information. For example, this description of the Quechua or victory dance, where the warriors formed a great circle, moving and writhing like a snake. He read, "The drumbeat for this was usually performed on what had been the body of an enemy. The skin had been flayed and the belly stretched to form a drum, and the whole body acted as a sound box while throbbings came out of the open mouth. Grotesque, but effective." Norman smiled, then allowed himself the luxury of a comfortable shiver. Grotesque, but effective, it certainly must have been. Imagine flaying a man, alive probably, and then stretching his belly to use it as a drum. For a moment, Norman could almost hear it. And then he remembered that rain has its rhythm too, and footsteps. Actually, he was aware of the footsteps without even hearing them. Long familiarity aided his senses whenever Mother came into the room. He didn't even have to look up to know she was there. In fact, he didn't look up. He pretended to continue his reading instead. Mother had been sleeping in her room, and he knew how crabby she could get when just awakened.
"Norman, do you know what time it is?"
He sighed and closed the book.
"Why didn't you turn the sign on when it got dark? And why aren't you up at the office where you belong?"
"Well, it started to rain so hard, and I didn't expect there'd be any traffic in this kind of weather."
"Nonsense. That's just the time you're likely to get some business. Lots of folks don't care to drive when it's raining."
"But it isn't likely anybody would be coming this way. Everyone takes the new highway." Norman heard the bitterness creeping into his voice, felt it welling up into his throat until he could taste it, and tried to hold it back. But too late now. He had to vomit it out.
"I told you how it would be at the time, when we got that advance tip that they were moving the highway. You could have sold the motel then, before there was a public announcement about the new road coming through. We could have bought all kinds of land over there for a song, closer to Fairvale, too. We'd have had a new motel, a new house, made some money, but you wouldn't listen. You never listen to me, do you? It's always what you want and what you think. You make me sick."
"Do I, boy?"
Mother's voice was deceptively gentle. But that didn't fool Norman. Not when she called him boy. 40 years old, and she called him boy. That's how she treated him, too, which made it worse. If only he didn't have to listen. But he did. He knew he had to. He always had to listen.
"Do I, boy?"
she repeated, even more softly.
"I make you sick, eh? Well, I think not. No, boy, I don't make you sick. You make yourself sick. That's the real reason you're still sitting over here on this side road, isn't it, Norman? Because the truth is that you haven't any gumption. Never had any gumption, did you, boy? Never had the gumption to leave home. Never had the gumption to go out and get yourself a job, or join the army, or even find yourself a girl."
"You wouldn't let me."
That's right, Armin. I wouldn't let you. But if you were half a man, you'd have gone your own way.
He wanted to shout out at her that she was wrong, but he couldn't. Because the things she was saying were the things he had told himself over and over again. It was true. She'd always laid down the law to him. But that didn't mean he always had to obey. Mothers sometimes are overly possessive, but not all children allow themselves to be possessed. It was really his fault as much as hers, because he didn't have any gumption.
You could have insisted, you know,
she was saying.
Suppose you'd gone out and found us a new location, then put the place here up for sale. But no, all you did was whine. And I know why. You never fooled me. It's because you really didn't want to move. You've never wanted to leave this place, and you never will now, ever. You can't leave, can you? Any more than you can grow up.
He couldn't look at her. Not when she said things like that, he couldn't. And there was nowhere else for him to look, either. The beaded lamp, the heavy, old, overstuffed furniture, all the familiar objects in the room, suddenly became hateful just because of long familiarity, like the furnishings of a prison cell. He stared out of the window, but that was no good either. He knew there was no escape for him out there. No escape anywhere from the voice that throbbed, the voice that drummed into his ears like that of the Inca corpse in the book, the drum of the dead. He clutched at the book now and tried to focus his eyes on it. Maybe if he ignored her and pretended to be calm, but it didn't work.
Look at yourself,
she was saying, the drum going boom, 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 and the sound reverberating from the mangled mouth.
I know why you didn't bother to switch on that sign. I know why you haven't even gone up to open the office tonight. You didn't really forget. It's just that you don't want anyone to come. You hope they don't come.
All right, he muttered. I admit it. I hate running a motel. Always have.
It's more than that, boy. You hate people. Because, really, you're afraid of them, aren't you? Rather snuggle up in a chair under the lamp and read. You did it 30 years ago, and you're still doing it now. Hiding away under the covers of a book.
There's a lot worse things I could be doing. You always told me that yourself. At least I never went out and got into trouble. Isn't it better to improve my mind?
Improve your mind? Ha! I know the sort of thing you read. Trash. And worse than trash.
This happens to be a history of the Inca civilization.
I just bet it is. And I'll just bet it's crammed full with nasty bits about those dirty savages. Like the one you had about the South Seas. Oh, you didn't think I knew about that one, did you? You can read all the books in the world, and you'll still be the same. I don't need to listen to a lot of vile, obscene rigmarole to know what you are. A big, fat, overgrown mama's boy.
It was deafening him. The drumbeat of her words, the drumbeat in his own chest. The vileness in his mouth made him choke. In a moment, he'd have to cry. Norman shook his head. To think that she could still do this to him, even now. But she could, and she was, and she would, over and over again. Unless...
I know what you're thinking, Norman. I know all about you, boy, more than you dream. But I know that, too, what you dream. You're thinking that you'd like to kill me, aren't you, Norman? But you can't, because you haven't the gumption. I'm the one who has the strength. I've always had it, enough for both of us. That's why you'll never get rid of me, even if you really wanted to. Of course, deep down, you don't want to. You need me, boy. That's the truth, isn't it?
Norman stood up, slowly. He didn't dare trust himself to turn and face her. Not yet. He had to tell himself to be calm first. Be very, very calm. Don't think about what she's saying. Try to face up to it. Try to remember. She's an old woman, and not quite right in the head. If you keep on listening to her this way, you'll end up not quite right in the head either. Tell her to go back to her room and lie down. That's where she belongs. And she'd better go there fast, because if she doesn't, this time you're going to strangle her with her own silver cord. He started to swing around, his mouth working, framing the phrases when the buzzer sounded. That was the signal. It meant somebody had driven in up at the motel and was ringing for service. Without even bothering to look back, Norman walked into the hall, took his raincoat from the hanger, and went out into the darkness. The rain had been falling steadily for several minutes before Mary noticed it and switched on the windshield wiper. At the same time, she put on the headlights. It had gotten dark quite suddenly, and the road ahead was only a vague blur between the towering trees. Trees. She couldn't recall a stretch of trees along here the last time she'd driven this way. Of course, that had been the previous summer, and she'd come into Fairvale in broad daylight, alert and refreshed. Now she was tired out from 18 hours of steady driving, but she could still remember and sense that something was wrong. Remember. That was the trigger word. Now she could remember dimly how she'd hesitated back there about a half hour ago when she came to the fork in the road. That was it. She'd taken the wrong turn. And now here she was, God knows where, with this rain coming down and everything pitch black outside. Get a grip on yourself now. You can't afford to be panicky. The worst part of it was over. It was true, she told herself. The worst part was over. The worst part had come yesterday afternoon, when she stole the money. She had been standing in Mr. Lowry's office when old Tommy Cassidy hauled out that big green bundle of bills and put them down on the desk. 36,000s and 8,500s added up to $40,000. Tommy Cassidy had put them down just like that, fanning them casually as he announced he was closing the deal and buying a house as his daughter's wedding present. Mr. Lowry pretended to be just as casual as he went through the business of signing the final papers. But after old Tommy Cassidy went away, Mr. Lowry got a little bit excited. He scooped up the money, put it into a big brown manila number 10 envelope, and sealed the flap. Mary noticed how his hands were trembling. "Here," he said, handing her the money. "Take it over to the bank. It's almost 4 o'clock, and I'm sure Gilbert would let you make a deposit." He paused, staring at her. "What's the matter, Miss Crane? Don't you feel well?" Maybe he had noticed the way her hands trembled now that she was holding the envelope. But it didn't matter. She knew what she was going to say, even though she was surprised when she found herself actually saying it.
"I seem to have one of my headaches, Mr. Lowry. As a matter of fact, I was just going to ask if it was all right if I took the rest of the afternoon off. We're all caught up in the mail, and we can't make out the rest of the forms on this deal until Monday."
Mr. Lowry smiled at her. He was in good humor, and why shouldn't he be? 5% of 40,000 was $2,000. He could afford to be generous. "Of course, Miss Crane. You just make this deposit, and then run along home. Would you like me to drive you?"
"No, that's all right. I can manage. A little rest."
"That's the ticket. See you on Monday, then. Take it easy." Mary Crane smiled at him very sweetly, then walked out of his office and out of his life, taking the $40,000 with her. You don't get that kind of an opportunity every day of your life. In fact, when you come right down to it, some people don't seem to get any opportunities at all. Mary Crane had waited over 27 years for hers. The opportunity to go on to college had vanished at 17 when Daddy was hit by a car. Mary went to business school for a year instead, and then settled down to support Mom and her kid sister, Lila.